this means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back to the 45th. Rabia here, and Susan, welcome back.
Hi, Rabia. It is okay to be back.
It is okay to be. Yeah, I mean, tell us where you were.
I was with my family on vacation for a week, and I was largely disconnected, and it was really great.
I saw some pictures of you in a, you standing, I think, on a boat holding a fish or something. It looked great.
Yeah, it was a good time, but getting back and like seeing all the chaos is like, all right, that's still reality.
So wait a minute. So are you saying for the last week you really, really checked out? Most people say
for me, checked out for me.
Okay, for your level of checking out, got it. Some stuff has happened, and you also came back to some crappy weather, but at least it's not 8,000 degrees anymore. So we've got that. I think last week Siraj and I were dying. All right. So speaking of weather, I want to start it off with some discussion about hurricane. We've all been bracing for this for the past week, Hurricane Florence, and, you know, bracing for the hurricane and also bracing against all of the lies that this president cannot fucking stop telling. But anyway, right now, official reports put 23 casualties, 19 of them in North Carolina, including a one-year-old baby. And I don't know the path of the hurricane right now. What's happened? Like, the DMV really didn't get much, a little bit of sprinkles.
It is.
It's what?
It's slow walking. It decided to stall and like go at a snail's pace and just keep dumping water on the Carolinas for a while.
Oh, yeah. That's awful. That's a lot of flooding. That's a lot of power loss. I mean, that's more loss of life, basically, and a lot of damage. It's, yeah, property damage is going to happen.
But the thing is, you know, we got lucky. Like, Florence could have been a lot worse.
It could have been worse.
It was close to being an epic storm. And it was still, I say close to being, it was epic. This is a new like record for waterfall in both Carolinas. It is. It's still going on. A huge hurricane, a huge storm. But, you know, roll the dice again, and it could have been coming in a Cat 3 or Cat 4, in which case, as bad as this is, looking worse still.
And yes, that's related to like the speed of the winds, right? Those categories related to the speed, right? So it's yeah, it sounds like a, like, you know, prolonged misery, but it didn't hit as hard as it possibly could have, which I actually wonder. I mean, I almost felt like that, like Trump was excited about how he kept saying it's going to be the biggest ever, tremendously big. Like, it's almost like he wants to preside over like the greatest natural disasters ever without being responsible for any of the fallout. He has been tweeting a lot about like the FEMA responses and this and that. He tweeted once about the deaths a couple of days ago, got the number wrong. He said 5 had died. Hasn't said a thing since then about it, about the casualties, but he's still tweeting about like Lisa Page and Mueller.
So one thing he did retweet was a 2-day-old warning in Spanish. I think it was from FEMA.
Telling
people to
this,
evacuate. Yeah. This was during the storm, after the point of evacuation was possible. So people were listening to him, which hopefully they weren't. They would have been in danger. So, and one thing I did see while I was gone was the some tweets one morning about Puerto Rico, which he decided to revive because he is the most unstrategic president probably ever. And I'm including like the first half of like the 19th century, which has a pretty terrible presence there too. That's just an insane move to make, and it's also an awful move to make. So on every level, it was terrible. And it's purely about his ego. Like, that's all it is. It's not even about like his agenda or his presidency. It's about his ego, full stop, where he cannot have people die that were his responsibility, because it looks bad for him. So he's denying they died altogether.
It's about his ego, but he does turn everything political, because he's saying that this is like a Democratic, this is basically some kind of a conspiracy by the Democrats. The death count from Maria, I mean, like those numbers are based on a study that was from a university that had no partisan agenda. And he's saying that this was, you know, like a Democratic move. Who's funding it? Blah, blah, blah. Who are these people? Why should I believe these numbers? In the meantime, the government of Puerto Rico is like, yep, that's about right. And so is everybody else. Paul Ryan took a courageous stand. kind of sort of, and said, yeah, we believe the numbers, and he didn't really comment much about the president. And the governor of Florida also as well was like, Yeah, the numbers, that's right. Those numbers are accurate.
Yeah, DeSantis, so, who was a huge Trump supporter, and I don't think has ever publicly broken with him on anything, decided that his political futures required him to break in this instance. In a light way, but given that many Puerto Rican, like, former residents had to evacuate to Florida and now live there and can vote there, he could not afford to deny that their relatives and family members have died when they clearly have.
I mean, even if it's in a light way, even if it's like without directly naming the president, just by saying these numbers are echo, you know, they're on his shit list now. I mean, he cannot take the slightest bit of, like, he can't take any kind of pushback on anything. Like, he is a dictator at heart. He really, I think he would execute people if he could for disagreeing with him in any way, shape, or form. So anyway, I don't expect even if prayerfully, I mean, the casualties from Florence are not going to be anywhere near those levels, but it's still not going to matter. I think he continues to lie when he doesn't even need to. So he'll probably continue to underplay the casualties from Florence, you know, even if he doesn't need to, even if they don't hit, like, obviously records like Maria. But one thing I was going to ask you, and I didn't even think about did you make it back in time here for the mother of all rallies, by the way?
No.
Oh, did you hear about it?
Wait, no, I didn't know what you're talking about.
Girl, it was in your backyard. The mother of all rallies took place in D.C. On the National Mall on Saturday, and it was an all-day event. It was a white nationalist event. It was, like, headlined by hate groups, conspiracy theorists. You had the Proud Boys were there. American Guard, another alt-right group, was there. All kinds of, you know, their leaders. I think this past Saturday, like, literally.
I have not heard a thing about it.
Yeah, that's because 300 people showed up. There was, like, nobody at the mother of all rallies. There were more people, like, at my kids' birthday parties. Well, you missed
it. No, I missed that.
You missed the opportunity.
So sad.
Too bad. Missed the opportunity to go check them out and make fun of them.
Yeah. I will say, though, on Florence, though, it's a reminder, basically, that while everything's happening to Trump and Trump world and corruption and threats to democracy, what we are wasting time on is stopping or minimizing the effects of global warming, which are going to make hurricanes like Florence worse. So,
yeah,
history will probably recall this time as the last chance humanity had to do something that could, you know, not make this species altering course. And we blew it because we're dealing with Mr. Trump.
Yeah, I mean, if anybody's able to make a difference, it won't be the United States at this point. Although even before Trump, I think that the GOP has for a long time now been crippling any efforts of the United States to be really impactful on this. Other countries in the world have made tremendous changes, like changing to wind power and solar energy and all kinds of things that are so much more smarter, cleaner, progressive, and safer for the environment. And we are just under the gun by, like, these lobbies, basically. That's our legislators are held hostage by. I mean, they're not held hostage. They are bribed by these lobbies, and they want the money, and they don't give a shit about the future of this world. Speaking of the environment, let me skip to some other news that I was going to talk about later, but let's just talk about it now. And that is, I read this and I couldn't believe it. I had to read it a couple times because we know Trump and his associates hate the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. But apparently since he took office, 1,600 workers have left the EPA. That is insane. I'm like, who the fuck is who is running the EPA? 1,600 left. I mean, just that's just one agency right now, but obviously a very important agency. And wait a minute, is Scott Pruitt still in charge of EPA?
He's not. No, he's gone. He's been gone.
Is he gone?
Oh yeah. He's like the one corrupt one who's actually gotten kicked out for the first time in a while. And I'm not surprised with the EPA because I've, like, over the past, I guess, 2 years now, I've run into, like, friends of friends who work at the EPA. And I remember once at a wedding, I was sitting next to a guy that worked there, and he was pondering his exit after being there for 10 years because just the morale, when, like, to say morale was low does not even begin to cover it. They're basically being required to take actions that undermine the entire purpose of the agency, and they just couldn't handle it.
You know, what I wouldn't pay to see all the memos that are going out to different agencies. And, you know, I went back into practice this year, into immigration practice with a partner. And, you know, after 6 or 7 years out of it, going back into it, I kind of, you know, it's a bureaucracy. I expected a lot of it to just be the same old, same old. It is not the same at all. It's not the same practice. I cannot believe the kind of responses we're getting from immigration officials, from CIS. And immigration lawyers are just like, we don't even know what to do. Like, I am getting denials on very basic cases, and the denials almost sound like Trump wrote them. And I'll give you an example. Something like, you file a case, here's the documentation, here's the evidence. They'll respond and say, well, we intend to deny it because you didn't provide the evidence. And you're like, well, what I did, I mean, I provided exactly what the evidence is, and this is the evidence, and here's a statute that supports it. And then they'll just respond and say denied. And so there's literally nothing, like, all you can do is appeal. Yeah. And you're not going to appeal, or you can appeal if you have the money, but it's not going to help. And so their marching orders now in all of these agencies is to just F everything up, basically, I think.
I mean, it's the power of the agencies. It's the one case where Trump's embracing it. A lot of the time he's trying to basically strangle agency power and resources. But for the case of immigration, they want to have total control of that, because then they can, just by, you know, deliberate fuckery, slow down the whole process and reduce the number of immigrants in the United States are coming in. So
I mean, they're just shutting it down. They're not even slowing. They're literally just shutting down the process this way. Because if you deny a case, there's only, I mean, like, at this point, like, you know, all I can do is, like, recommend some of my clients to sue in federal court, like, sue them for these kinds of adjudications. But, you know, that's time and money, and most people don't have that. It's not easy to do. And then a lot of these agencies are governed by very kind of broad discretionary statutes that, well, I mean, that can be read a lot of different ways. So it's really a shitty time to be practicing immigration. Speaking of which, if we want to move on, we can talk a little bit about some more immigration news. Siraj and I spoke a little bit about the status of the detained children who had been separated, like the ones who were under the order to be reunited. But a new piece of news came out in the last few days, which I thought was pretty shocking, out of the New York Times reported on it. So for the record, I was well into my 30s before I actually went to get a proper bra fitting. And I'll be honest, I have never returned since. It's not exactly the most comfortable experience, but you don't have to do it anymore because we've got Third Love. Third Love gives you a perfect fitting bra. They use thousands of real women's measurements, and they design their bras with breast size and shape in mind. I mean, not just the size, but the shape of your body, because hello, we are all shaped differently. So their bras fit impeccably and they feel fantastic. They just added 24 new sizes, and right now they are the industry leader with a total of 70 sizes. There is quality in every single stitch. The fabrics are premium, the designs are beautiful, the fit is great. And once again, all from the comfort of your home, no need for some awkward fittings. You can find your fit in 60 seconds online, order and try it on at home. Now, I told you how beautiful their designs are, but they're also really practical. They take into account how it feels to wear a bra. That's why they have straps that don't slip. They have tagless labels. There's no more label itching your back. They're lightweight, and the foam cups are super thin memory foam. So Third Love guarantees a perfect fit. Returns and exchanges are completely free and easy. You have nothing to lose, so give them a shot. Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everybody, and right now they're offering our listeners 15% off your first order. All you gotta do is go to thirdlove.com/45th to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. Once again, that's thirdlove.com/45th for 15% off today. In May of 2017, so about a year, a little over a year ago, there were 2,400 children in ICE custody. Okay, 2,400 migrant children in ICE custody. These are not necessarily children who are separated at the border or whatever. They're not the ones who fall under this judicial mandate.
Yeah.
Yeah. In that time, since May of 2017 till today, that number has increased fivefold. Right now, there are 12,000, almost 13,000 children, 12,800 children in custody. This is, like, they've broken every record. Basically, they've never had this many children in custody before. I'm not even talking about immigrants. Forget immigrants in general. This is just children.
Yeah. And of course, they're trying to buy all these, to co-opt all these various, military bases, private contractors to build more baby prisons, because they're not adjudicating these cases. So more come in and there's already a backlog and it's just getting bigger and bigger. I guess their theory is that they keep the backlog going long enough and big enough, they can just prevent people from trying to immigrate to the United States, which doesn't seem to understand the logic of why people, especially people seeking like refugee status, having, I mean, obviously this is a factor they'll consider, but it's not as if like they're gonna be like, oh, I don't need to be a refugee anymore because the immigration process got harder. It's they're escaping risk to life and limb. So most likely we might see a small reduction. We haven't yet. We might, but it's not going to slow down to allow this whole theory of let's back up the system to work. It's just going to get bigger and bigger until God knows what.
I mean, I think a lot of these people, if they could, they wish that they bordered Canada and not United States, because a lot of them would want to get to Canada and apply for status there, refugee status there. But they can't make it. They can't get past this huge hunk of land. And regardless of whether or not it has an impact on the number of people coming here, what are you going to do with the ones you're holding? 12,800 children, I'm guessing at least the same number of adults, if not double, triple that. I think there's more than 100,000 immigrants in prisons right now. What are you going to do with them? If you're just going to like stop the process in terms of like not placing them with families, not adjudicating their cases, their asylum claims, what are you going to do with them? Just hold them indefinitely, which, by the way, we talked about last week, which is now that the Trump administration has reversed the policy of not holding children indefinitely. So I guess that's what they're going to do.
Have you followed that, Robbie? I don't even know how they – so there was a settlement that they were on before this that was entered under prior administrations where they agreed not to hold the children. How are they disregarding that? I saw that they were, but I never saw like why or how.
The way they're disregarding that is the way they're reading the settlement. And I can't remember exactly, but the details of the settlement say that they cannot be detained indefinitely under certain circumstances. And what this administration is saying is that the way we are detaining them do not meet. It's not those circumstances. Basically, I'm sorry. Next week, I can be much more like specific. But exactly. They're saying that, yeah, but this detention is not that detention. Like we are using we have caretakers, we have counselors, we're doing all these other things. It's not the same thing. And so that, I think, has to be litigated at this point. I don't know. I'm sure somebody's doing something somewhere. But they're basically saying, yeah, we are still – they're not saying we're not bound by this settlement. They're saying that the settlement doesn't apply in this situation.
So they're still at least pretending to act under rule of law. I guess there's that, however tenuously.
Yeah, kind of, sort of. I mean – but, you know, so what's going to happen with these babies? I mean, right now, I have kids who go to school, and as soon as the school year starts, I mean, I'm pretty happy when summer breaks over, but as soon as it starts, we get sick immediately. As soon as your children go and hang out with them, that's like a Petri dish. It's a Petri dish. Okay. So right now what's happening is in these facilities, like the conditions, because they are basically at capacity, they are beyond capacity. They are like running low on basics, like food and water are inadequate, but there are outbreaks of vomiting, diarrhea, respiratory infections. I mean, anybody with children, you guys know what it's like. Imagine like a 3 or 4 year old with a cough that won't stop, right? All the kinds of communicable diseases, because they're also coming from other countries. I mean, it's a nightmare. It's going to scar them forever. And it's a scar on us also, I would say.
Yeah. So the other big news of the week, which unfortunately we can't get into too much in depth right now, is the Manafort settlement.
Tell me about that. I didn't really follow that.
I wish I could. So I have not yet gotten a chance. I got in yesterday. I've not gotten a chance to read the actual settlement. So I'm still, you know, catching up there. From what I have seen, it's pretty shocking. I don't understand.
It was shocking how.
Because it makes no sense. Like, I mean, from what I've seen, the settlement it's unusual in that it's really long. That's why I haven't read it. Usually, like, trying to read that thing would not be a problem. But it's like 38 pages, I think. And it had like 5 million exhibits. I'm exaggerating, but it was like 800 or something. It was an insane number of exhibits. You don't do this with an information like this. This is not how this usually works. So there's that, which is why I am not prepared to talk about it yet. But also, it's just, you know, Manafort didn't have much leverage. Going into this next trial, I was wondering, because there were already leaks that there might be a settlement coming. And I was kind of, you know, just ballparking like what he might have to give, what he might get out of it. And the settlement itself, like, almost is settlement. The plea agreement is nothing. He got nothing. Like, it's like he didn't have much leverage to start with, but he had less than I thought he did, which is what I'm still trying to figure out what was going on here. Because, like, he didn't have many cards to play, but he didn't play the ones he had. And from what I can see so far, it's hard to see why he decided that his best bet was not still to hope for that pardon. Because if I was Manafort, I would think that my best chance of beating all of this is just to bide my time, hope for that pardon, and sail out.
So what can you tell me, what are the basic terms here? What are the terms?
The big shocker is that he is cooperating. There was a chance it could have been like a Cohen deal, where Cohen just got a straight up plea deal. He had no requirement to cooperate. When I was reading about the reports came out, I was thinking like, well, I guess he's not cooperating then because he didn't get nada. And cooperation would presumably be one of those cards he could play to, you know, get some, you know, better terms. But he is cooperating. So he has like the best case scenario for him right now is like 10 years. The man of Manafort's age, you know, that's kind of a life sentence on its own, likely.
Right. Do you think it might be that other people who he wants to protect might get hurt if he doesn't do this?
It absolutely is. His daughter and his wife especially, because she probably had exposure too, based on what we know. I mean, his wife's ex-husband has already pled and cooperated. So, you know, who knows that he could have given something on her. It's possible that that was part of his calculus here.
I mean, they could get pardons too, of course. I mean, like, you really want to go there.
Yeah, the money, this way he gets to save a property for his kid or his wife to live in. So there were some stuff he got, but they were marginal. And what's the most striking to me so far from what I've seen is that it seems like the whole thing is designed to thwart any possibility of pardon.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. They've left open like room for state charges. They've made it like civil forfeiture. So the money is going straight. Like, he's not getting that money back. Money's gone.
Right.
That's nothing Trump can undo.
I mean, also the optics of him cooperating, that's enough for Trump to be like, forget you. He's not going to pardon somebody who's cooperating with Mueller. He won't.
I mean, he might, but again, much less likely now. I can only assume that Manafort had no cards left to play. And this was the only chance he had to, you know, not lose literally everything, even though he lost almost everything and will probably die in prison. And the cooperation is like, it's successful cooperation. That 10-year sentence that he wants to get requires a successful cooperation. So unless he gives up the goods that make Mueller happy, they're not even going to get the 10-year recommendation. I mean, there's always a chance that the judge could decide to go below the recommendation, but that's not very likely, I would say, in this case.
And that cooperation is not just related to investigative issues directly related to him. It could be about anything.
It is everything. I saw what I saw was like bits and pieces, like all, I think it was Friday. And I remember just seeing all these like little bits and pieces coming out. I'm like, wait, why are they saying that cooperation is only related to everything but Trump collusion issues? Because at some point, and I think it was Rudy Giuliani, is who we think what came from now. There's this whole thing coming out that said like, oh, Manafort is cooperating, but the cooperation is not including anything to do with like Trump and collusion. And that makes no sense. That's not how cooperation works. I don't even know how you would write a cooperation agreement.
That was for his audience of one. He is saying that so Trump will get off his back. Giuliani knows it's not
true. That's probably what it was.
It makes no sense. I mean, we all know it's not true. I'm a layperson. I know it's not true. And Giuliani's just like, trying to assuage Trump right now. So Trump, you know, he's going to flip it. And it's one way to at least delay that.
But so this is like, you know, I hate to say it, but this is kind of the beginning of the end. And I stress the beginning of the end. Mm-hmm. But at this point, I mean, if Manafort's cooperating, Mueller will know what there is to know. There's certainly stuff I'm sure that Manafort was not part of and stuff that happened after he left, although he was still talking to Trump then, so he probably still knows it. But if anything, if there's collusion going on in like the biggest, like most steel dossier kind of way, well, Manafort's going to know it and Manafort's going to tell him about it. My guess is whatever happened was a little more subtle in nature. But again, I still think Manafort would have been the linchpin to it because he's the one who is positioned to do it. He's the one who has done it before. He's the one who would know. Also, one thing about the information they used to charge him with. Now, in some cases, you'd expect, like in a white collar case, part of the plea negotiations would involve how that information is written. You would want it written in a way that makes it less harmful to your client so that, you know, even if you can't like necessarily like get a better sentence, at least this information with like damning allegations against you, or not even allegations, damning admitted claims against you, isn't quite so bad as it could be. That didn't happen here. This one's awful. The parts I've seen are just brutal and scathing for Manafort. They clearly got no say in how that was being written. If they did bargain for any wording there, it's hard to see where they could have gotten it because, like, all of it's so bad. It's terrible. But it seems like they're heading towards something. I don't know why, other than possibly making it harder politically for Trump to do a pardon here, I don't know why they would have done it this way. Unless maybe they're setting it up for future charges. And if that's the case, that's very bad news for Trump, because what they're laying out...
Wait, setting Manafort up for future charges?
No, setting Manafort and everyone future charges. Because the detail they included there wasn't necessary. And Mueller, he's kind of a by-the-book sort of guy. So one possible reason they had the details they included there is that they thought it was a part of a pattern that will be relevant in light of future charges that may be coming. That's a projection at this point. That's just a guess. But
maybe it's bait. They put it out there and then they watch the people.
They got into detail like the Israeli connection about Timoshenko, how basically once upon a time Manafort was hired to make a bumbling, uncouth, unpolitically savvy buffoon to turn him into a populist with, you know, very bombastic rhetoric, and promoted him by saying that his opponent was corrupt and that she ought to be in prison, and then got the guy elected and then actually did lock up the opponent.
Sounds really familiar.
I know. So you read that and it's hard not to see whoever wrote that obviously had the parallels in mind. What I'm still wondering about is why they're including that in the information when it wasn't strictly necessary. So yeah, there's a lot more to come, and this is...
But it's been included for a reason. I think that's fair to say. These people are smart enough and mindful enough that this is not... Yeah, this is not a misstep. This is deliberate.
I really do think this is a federal court record, though, for a number of exhibits and information. I'm probably wrong about that, but it definitely feels like a record.
Nice. Okay, well, we'll keep on top of it. I'm sure you'll keep us apprised. And Manafort has another... Doesn't he have another trial coming up?
No, that's way settled.
This is it.
This is way settled, yeah.
Way settled, okay.
So there's no
that's what I was trying to figure out.
Interestingly, shockingly, there's not been a single tweet about it from Trump.
Right. When there's no tweet, that's something he really scared of, I think. I think when there's real fear, he's just like, I'm not going to say. Like, it's like he didn't tweet about Stormy forever, right? That's when he's scared. I don't think he's tweeted. I don't know if he's ever tweeted her name ever.
I don't think he has.
I think he's talked about Avenatti, but I don't know if he's ever tweeted about Stormy. But I know for a long time, it didn't. Complete. Yeah, I know. I am here to talk about my favorite pants, y'all. I'm talking about Beta brand. I am not kidding when I'm telling you. These are not just my favorite pants now. They're probably the most favorite pants I've ever owned, like ever. Beta brand makes the remarkable dress pant yoga pant. Have you ever heard of such a thing? A party on the top, business on the bottom. I have a black pair of the dress pant yoga pants. And can I tell you, especially after having the baby, I'm gonna be honest, it was hard to give up my maternity pants, but you can't wear those things forever. And these pants they just feel as comfortable as any kind of elastic waisted pant you'll ever, but it doesn't look like you're wearing a yoga pant, or it doesn't look like you're wearing maternity pants. They look like professional pants. They're beautifully, beautifully tailored. I've gotten compliments on them. The fabric is like premium thick fabric. It's like made out of this Ponte fabric. The pants have dress pant details. So they've got all the details. They've got all the bells and whistles of a dress pant, right? Like the belt loops, a front button, faux zipper and pockets. And they've got great colors. I mean, black, navy, gray, khaki, all the colors you need. Also seasonally and limited edition colors get released every single month. They have selections for all shapes and sizes, which by the way is another issue for me. It's hard for me to find pants that are proportional and fit well in my body because, you know, we are all shaped differently. I am thicker in the waist, so pants that fit me in the waist are too big in the leg. Pants that fit in the leg are too tight in the waist. But this does not happen with Beta brand because they are stretchy, they're comfortable, they mold to your body, and they still look professional. I started wearing Beta brand's dress pant yoga pant because I heard from other ladies that they're fantastic, and I'm basically never gonna stop wearing them. You can try them out too. Visit betabrand.com and use our code 45th to get 20% off your pair. By the way, I'm gonna get some more using my own code. Millions of women agree that these are the most comfortable pants we'll ever wear to work. That's betabrand.com, BETABRAND.com. Use the code 45th and get 20% off of your dress pant yoga pants today. Other stories, and I don't want these to blip by. They're not like huge stories, but I call it part of the Trump effect. And that's like the normalization of certain things that are happening, like overt racism, censorship. So I have like a couple different stories to talk about when it comes to some really racist shit that went down this week. So This past week on Morning Joe, their Mississippi State Senator Chris McDaniel was on, and he was asked about black voters. And he was asked, he said, you know, you have a racist past, and how are you going to win over black voters? His response, and it's a very familiar response now because we've heard it from the president, was, quote, after 100 years of begging for federal government scraps, where are you today? So this seems to be like the only like strategy that a lot of these folks have vis-a-vis people of color. It's like, well, you're all, you know, in hell anyway. So you may like, what have you got to lose? Now, right on the heels of that, Eric Trump, who is not, I feel like, in the media as much. I mean, Don Trump Jr. is much more prominent and maybe much more obnoxious, but he was on Fox and Friends and he said that Bob Woodward, who wrote the new book Fear, that he wrote the book to make three extra shekels. And unless you're very familiar with kind of, that's, I mean, it's not even a dog whistle. It's like an outright, I mean, it's loud and proud. Shekels is a term that's used by white nationalists to describe money that's tainted by Jewish influence. It is very commonly part of like white nationalists and Nazi parlance propaganda. You see it online. You see it in their memes. This guy has, that means he's like steeped in this stuff. Like that's how he thinks. That is the world he's in. Because most people don't talk like that.
Yikes. That's just like way not to
on Fox and Friends.
I mean, yeah, Eric, you're going to lose your status as the less stupid one if you keep this up.
The least stupid one. Yeah. Or is that Tiffany?
Less stupid.
Tiffany's the least. Maybe. Yeah. Less stupid. Okay.
Compared to his brother.
Yeah. And then we've got a GOP candidate for Florida governor. And I know a lot of GOP candidates are trying to outdo each other with their racism and xenophobia. But he spoke four times, apparently, at a conference hosted by David Horowitz, who is a very well-known racist activist who said that African-Americans owe their freedom to white people. So that's the latest in GOP racist news.
I mean, we're at a point where GOP congressmen can openly retweet and promote white nationalist, white supremacist ideology, and no one says a word. It's literally beyond common at this point. There were two GOP congressmen who like were caught hanging out with a Holocaust denier who the first time they hung out with him, they're like, oh, we had no idea. And they're caught accidentally hanging out with him again. No, it's not an accident and no one cares. You are allowed, if you're a Republican congressman, you can support white nationalists openly and no one's going to bat an eye. No one's even going to write an article about it.
You know, I think what's shocking to me is how quickly this has happened. This guy's been in office a year and a half. This is happening really, really quickly. I mean, much more, I really did think when he was inaugurated, I thought the center will hold. I thought, you know, there's certain norms that he cannot push us out of that can't be rolled back.
Surprise. They can be.
Surprise. All right. So a couple of things, a couple of news articles about, although I think Texas and Florida always have crazy news, but apparently this past Friday, Texas State Board of Education, I mean, the entire state board, we're not talking about a county, we're not talking about a little municipality, the whole goddamn Texas State Board of Education said they voted and they're going to eliminate any mention of Hillary Clinton and God knows why Helen Keller from the state's history curriculum. Yes. Yes. Did you miss that?
I did. And
as part of an effort to streamline, quote, the curriculum in public schools going forward, all mention of Helen Keller, what did that poor woman do? And Hillary Clinton is going to be removed from history books. They're going to remove Hillary Clinton's name from history books.
I don't get it. Why? Like, why even like Helen Keller? Like,
what did Helen Keller do?
I mean, they don't want to.
I mean, she was a secretary of state, a senator. She was the first female secretary of state.
And also, like, how do you like not tell recent history without like mentioning her? Like, even if you're like not, like, even as a side note, be like, I guess
in a nonpartisan way.
I guess you're like secretary of state, nameless, did this. I mean, that's insane. It's all insane. Yeah.
Look, we've always had problems with history books, and it's not just in America, especially it's in any Texas. Country you go to. Yeah. So when it comes to, you know, the Holocaust being, it's weird, but it's just really spiteful, right? That's what it is. It's so obviously spiteful. I mean, I get the reasons. I'm not saying I agree with it, but I understand like the broader agenda and like downplaying some aspects of like slavery and this and that. And that's just whitewashing, right? Whitewashing our history so nobody feels too bad about anything. But this is like, it's kind of crazy. I don't know. And then there's some news coming out that, you know, there's certain libraries, like they're like, we're not going to carry this book, that book. But I don't think that's, I think libraries have always done that. I think bookstores do that. But it's the dumbing down, the further dumbing down of a faction of this country, which is like, that's what I don't understand. I'm like, you're going to take all these students. Okay, Helen Keller is one of the most inspirational figures that I ever learned about growing up.
Like, it Helen also Keller was and offensive. Frank. Like, who was like, who has Helen Keller ever pissed off? Like, is there How's any agenda? Enemy? Is there any agenda there that like Helen Keller is like somehow a part of?
Yeah. Well, you know what's weird about that is that it almost ties in with another story that came out this week about how Trump, when he was told that the Trump Tower had to have Braille in the building, he was like, basically, F the blind. He's like, I don't care. I'm not. He was told it's a regular federal regulation. He's like, no, I don't care. I don't want the Braille in my building. He's like, no blind people are going to live in Trump Tower. Maybe there's a thing that we're not even aware of, like this anti-blind people bigotry.
And he didn't want sprinklers.
Ramps.
Ramps.
Oh, what?
He didn't want sprinklers because that's why there's no sprinklers in Trump Tower.
Yeah, that's, you pay a lot of money to die in a fire in that place then.
And someone did.
Yeah. All right, so let's get to Kavanaugh.
Yes.
And I'll let you take the lead on this.
Jesus, it's been quite a ride. I don't remember a time when nominations were exciting. Like the first one I can recall was like Roberts. So like, you know, it's been pretty smooth sailing since then. This one's like, well, let's go back to the throw back to the Bork and the Thomas days. You know, Gorsuch I'm not a fan of. I think Gorsuch is like, I call him Lawrence Scalia because he like wants to be Scalia, but he is not capable of doing it. But he's got all the same problems Scalia did. But whatever. Like, that's a pretty typical nominee. Kavanaugh is, all I can think of right now is McConnell sitting somewhere bitterly going, I told you so. Because, like, McConnell told him so. He had suggestions that he wanted that Trump shut down. Trump wanted Kavanaugh. And McConnell's like, no, let's not do that. That might be a problem. Let's do something else. And Trump's like, no, I want Kavanaugh. And McConnell's like, well, I have no spine and no self-respect, so let's do Kavanaugh. But McConnell was right, because even putting aside recent events, recent days, Kavanaugh had a bumpy ride for good. Like, it was, he did not do well during the confirmation hearing. I watched a bunch of what I could, and he is evasive. He is a political operative at heart. You can clearly see.
He's been caught numerous times, not just in these hearings. He's been caught lying in his 2004, 2006 confirmation hearing. This guy is problematic. He's definitely problematic.
Compare him to Gorsuch. Like, Gorsuch, like, I'm not a fan of it in any way, but, like, you know, he does what you expect from a nominee. He acts the way you'd expect someone in his position to act. He does all the right moves, says the right thing. Like, he fits a mold, and you know what you're expecting. With Kavanaugh, you watch it, and you're like, wait, this is something's off here.
Right.
He's not forthcoming. He has no candor. He will not commit to anything. And even things he should be able to, like whether or not you've talked to someone about the Mueller investigation when you're a sitting judge in the D.C. Circuit, my God, that should never be a question you can't answer. And then there's like the weirdness, like, oh, he's like the carpool dad, rah, rah, rah. And they put on like a parade of like teenage girls showing how much he loves women.
God, that was so weird to me. The optics were weird. The thinking behind it.
It was weird. Like, even before, like,
it was not normal
at the time. And it may be the case. It seemed like a really, really awkward attempt to get past the Roe thing. I mean, everyone knows he's going to go overturn Roe. That's the whole goal here. That's why he's on the list. Like, if he wasn't going to overturn Roe, he wouldn't have been nominated. So that's like what they're trying to set up and give Collins Murkowski cover to confirm this guy who's going to overturn Roe, which they pretend they don't want to see happen.
Right. That's the only thing the GOP is in it for. But that, and then Trump wants him to protect Trump.
We're going to go back to like, birth control is no longer constitutional right at this point, because there's the logic that he uses would definitely overturn Griswold as well. So that would be horrific. And that may have been what the goal was to try and like brace against that by portraying him as this like female friendly, like, you know, conservative feminist dude. But it was weird. The optics weren't great. And it just came off awkward and like, okay, whatever. Like a lot of dudes, you know, watch their kids or coach sports teams and like no one makes that big a deal out of it. Why is there such a big deal of this? Maybe no conservative guys ever like hang out with teenage girls, but like I'd assume most of them with teenage daughters do. Of course, now we have a possible inkling into why that was being set up, because Feinstein, I don't even know what happened. I kind of tuned into this yesterday. So I know Feinstein had a letter from a woman we now know is Christine Ford. And she did not...
A letter written in confidentiality, basically, right?
Yeah. And I knew there was some dispute about whether, like, why she didn't tell people sooner. But from what I can tell, like, Ford asked her not to tell anyone. Like, it was her request. not to make let it go public, in which case I don't see why Feinstein's getting all the heat she's getting. But I don't. I actually don't even know what happened.
I didn't
there.
See any of the heat.
Oh, yeah, I saw I the heat. They were heat. Claiming she was the okay. one, like, somehow she sabotaged this process by Democrats claiming this, that she somehow was holding out or, like, not taking the allegations seriously. I do not know enough to actually say what the hell's going on there. But from what I have seen, it doesn't seem that she did anything other than what she should have done.
Yeah, she respected the right of the victim here, you know, and did what she said. I mean, like, which that woman wanted, didn't want this made public. I don't know if her expectation was that it would be shared behind the scenes with other senators or what was yeah. the purpose of the letter.
My guess was that like, it was like a heads up, like hoping that others were coming forward so she wouldn't have to, but she could add her vote to it. Like say, hey, look, there's more. I'm totally guessing, but one reason you'd write a letter like that is that you want to offer cooperation to any other woman who came forward and would put their name on it, even if you okay. don't want to put your name on it. Of course, her name did get leaked, and she decided yesterday to, like, well, you know, all the harms I was worried about are happening now, so I might as well
right.
stand up.
Right.
And I'll say as an initial matter, whatever is going on here, whatever the story is, I do think that if she wanted to stay anonymous, absolutely her right. And I would not judge her in the slightest. Like that's like hardcore no judgment because her life right. is going to be upended and this is going to affect her forever. Like this will never go away and it's public and everyone will.
I can only imagine the teams of people they have yeah. to dig up everything ugly about her ever. Her children, her husband, it's they're going to try to destroy her.
Yeah. So her wanting to keep her name out of it, I totally get. And that makes total sense. At the same time, I do think that if she had remained anonymous, this is not an issue that we could seriously make a part of the right. confirmation debate. There's lots of other reasons to be skeptical of Kavanaugh here. And this one, if yeah. she was anonymous, this should not be part of it because that's just.
I think she realized that.
Yeah.
She realized that. And that's why she has now. She's gone public and she's also said through her lawyer that she would be willing to testify publicly in front of the Senate. Can we talk a little bit about the allegations themselves?
Yeah.
Because that's also, it's been crazy for the last like 24 hours, people talking about this. Fill us in or?
So according to her letter and the WAPO report came out yesterday, Christine Ford was 15 at the time. This was in Bethesda, or not Bethesda. This was somewhere in, I think, Montgomery County, Maryland, close to D.C. She was a student at a girls' high school. She was 15-ish. And one day she was at a gathering with four boys from, I believe all four, we don't know. So there's four boys involved. We know two of them that she says, assuming that all four of them went to the boys' prep school that Kavanaugh went to. And apparently they were at a pool. And after the pool, they went to someone's house and they had a beer. But she says that Kavanaugh and his friend, Mark Judge, were much drunker. They had been drinking already before everyone got there, before everyone started hanging out. And at some point, she went upstairs to go to the bathroom. And as she was going upstairs, Kavanaugh pulled her into a bedroom. And his friend, Mark Judge, turned up the volume for music to cover up her screams. And Kavanaugh, she says, began trying to undress her, was on top of her on a bed, and was covering up her mouth. It sounds like she was panicking because the way she describes it, like she thought he might inadvertently kill her. Not that he was trying to, but like him trying to keep her quiet,
he might
cut off her airway. So she was panicking because of that. And she could hear Mark Judge in the background, like encouraging him and telling him, yeah, like get it or yeah. And then she says that also Mark Judge at some point said stop. And then it all ended when Mark Judge jumped on top of the two of them, causing like, you know, the pile to fall apart or something. And she was able to break free and ran and locked herself in the bathroom. And she stayed there until she heard the two boys go downstairs. And then she just left the house. I mean, that's
incredibly
it's
terrifying and traumatizing for anybody, but 15 years old, that's awful.
Yeah, it's a horrific story. She told
he was 17. Kavanaugh was 17 at the time.
I think he was like end of his junior year. So I'm not sure the exact age, but he would have been end of his junior year, 17-ish. And she told no one at the time, which of course not, because it was 1982 and she was a 15-year-old girl who, I mean, if she told anyone, they'd been like, what? You went alone to a house with four teenage boys older than you and you were all drinking. Right. What did you expect to happen? I mean, even today you might get that response. So
yeah, that's true.
It's of course she told no one. It seems like she did tell a couple friends and like her husband, like they like just said something happened. You know, I had experienced my life. It wasn't great. Like, you know, didn't get into details. And then it seems like at a therapist session, she did give the whole story. I think it was 2012. And that right now, that's like her, I guess her corroboration she's using is the notes from the therapist took. She's also given the post the names of the two other boys in the house that night. Mm-hmm. And I know they declined to comment for the Sunday article, but I'm sure we'll, some point we'll probably hear from them or at least hear their names.
Well, Judge has commented, who was the other boy in the room at the time, and he's unequivocally saying it didn't happen, which is what Kavanaugh's also saying.
No, he's not. He's saying he doesn't recall.
Oh, I thought that's what he said.
He is saying he does not recall.
What I thought I read was that he's saying, I have no idea what she's talking about. This didn't happen. Like, I wasn't, I didn't see anything.
His statement was,
like,
I don't recall. And also, he wrote a memoir saying that he was so blackout drunk as a teenager in high school that he doesn't remember a lot and he chooses not to recall a lot. So he says he doesn't recall anything like that. Huh. But that's not really a ringing endorsement. Kavanaugh has denied it completely, absolutely.
Right.
Mark Judge, I mean, that guy is gross. Oh my God, he's so great. He closed down all social media accounts, but I've seen enough where it was
too late.
Not great. Oh my God, that guy is pretty awful. Creeper.
Super sexist, womanizing. He sounds like a piece of pig.
I mean, of course, thanks to the fact that the yearbook is available, we know that him and Kavanaugh definitely were friends. They have little in jokes in their yearbook. And side note, whoever was in charge of the yearbook, whichever teacher was like supervising like the Georgetown prep.
Did not read everything.
They weren't like phoning it in. They clearly were like taking a break and like saying, okay, kids, do whatever you want. Because those kids were like writing all kinds of stuff, like talking about like being alcoholics and like 100 keg challenges.
What did Mark Judge write as a note in his yearbook on his page?
Mark Judge wrote, Bart, have you boofed yet? And Bart, by the way, is obviously his nickname for Brett Kavanaugh, because in his memoir, he referred to a guy as Bart O'Kavanaugh. And mm-hmm. Kavanaugh, in his yearbook, wrote, Judge, have you boofed yet? I don't know what boofed means. I looked it up, I will say, so don't tweet at me with, like, the Urban Dictionary definition discussing that. I don't want to hear it again.
There was also the line about the gong thing, right?
Oh, yeah. Some women should be beaten like a gong or something like
women.
That.
Something like women should be hit like a gong somehow. I don't know. It was just, I mean, these were okay, so this is what's happening on social media now and all the right-wing media. First, it's like, it's not really true. It didn't happen. Okay, so maybe it happened when he was 17. What drunk 17-year-old? Is that the standard we're really going to set? I'm like, these are the arguments that, you know, people are actually making, that really we're going to go all the way back there. So what if he did it at 17? Which makes me question that, are these people saying that this is absolutely normal behavior for a 17-year-old boy?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
It is super telling. Like, you can absolutely tell. Like, the guys who are like, okay, now it, Me Too has gone too far. You're like, okay, well, why was this the line where you said it went too far? That seems like a very abrupt decision. I mean, I'm sure that some of them just happen to feel that way, but it's hard not to think that the people who keep saying, like, this is, you know, normal boyhood behavior, they're now scared that they might be like, oh, wait, I did something that could be Me Too'd? I don't even know. It's gross and awful.
I feel like if this is in any way normalized behavior for 17-year-old boys, and, you know, I grew up very sheltered. I wasn't allowed to go to parties. I have no idea. I would love to have a widespread survey of men say, is this really, like, considered normal, acceptable behavior at that age? Like, do people, like, is this a thing? I'm like, I don't even know anymore. I don't trust. I would think absolutely not. This is crazy. Of course I have men in my life. I can't imagine at any age that they would try anything like this as boys or as adults. And then I see all this like response on social media where it's like, whatever. So now they're just saying she's basically just lying about the whole thing.
Yeah. Some men clearly think it's normal. That doesn't mean that all men, I mean, it's, I don't know. It's so depressing. Now I will say, now I fully believe Christine Ford. There's nothing about her allegations, nothing about this. It's just, she's lying. There's no reason for her to lie. Right. She has cooperation. Like, this is not something, this is not why, like in 2012, how is she going to like be like, oh, I need to like lay the groundwork now for some like Democratic senator plan here. No. She's telling the truth. Now it's important to note though, that does not mean that Kavanaugh necessarily did this, because memory is unclear sometimes. I could totally see it being something. Like, I think it's possible. We need more information. It should be investigated. That's why we need to slow things down and have an investigation here. For instance, say that these four boys went to Kavanaugh's house to hang out and that's where it happened. I could see, and this is all hypothetical, I could see that someone's memory might recall it being Kavanaugh involved in this assault, when really that's because it was at Kavanaugh's house that it happened, or something like that. So I think there's totally room here. Like, I don't think
To me, that's a kind of a stretch. I mean, she knew these boys.
Memory is
for her,
like,
unless
weird.
She's never, unless she just was meeting them and she didn't know them and maybe she got them confused. But first of all, his friend is in the room. She specifically remembers the name of the friend.
Mark Judge. And he stopped it. That's the other thing. Mark Judge stopped it. He's the one who, like, decided to go too far, and he jumped on them to break it up. Yeah. So if her...
We know Judge and him are close, you know? And honestly, as somebody who has been sexually assaulted by somebody I didn't know very well, I can remember every single detail about his face. Now, I'm not saying that obviously a lot of survivors don't. It doesn't happen that way. But it would be...
It needs thorough investigation.
Just be really weird.
It needs thorough investigation.
It needs more investigation. Yeah.
And you know what? I just say, let's have Mark Judge testify under oath before the committee. That would resolve a lot of this right now, I bet.
I don't even know if it would. I mean, like, but here's the thing. How do you come back from the point that Trump has already pushed us, which is this? Yeah, so it happened. So what? He was 17. I mean, if that's the standard now, then it's not even going to matter. If they prove beyond any, you know, doubt that this definitely happened, they can just say, well, yeah, but he was 17. It's like the locker room talk.
It still matters, so what?
It's locker room talk. Yeah. The other thing I want to talk about, although
for Murkowski's base, it still matters enough where it could sink it. And it should be more, it should sink it everywhere, but it still matters in our current electoral climate.
I hope so. All right. Well, let's see. I mean, I'm guessing she's offered to go public. I mean, this is,
the big question now is whether we're going to go ahead with the vote on Thursday as planned, or if they're going to actually hear its allegations. The Republicans obviously don't want to hear the allegations out in public. They are trying to make it.
McConnell's like, nope, we got to go forward.
McConnell's
Lindsey Graham's
silent.
Like, nope, we got to go forward.
I have not heard a damn word from McConnell yet. I may have missed it, but I have not seen a thing from McConnell, which is weird.
Actually, you're right, because it's Lindsey Graham who issued a statement saying that we need to go forward with the vote.
McConnell's
sorry.
McConnell's locked in a dark room going, I told you so, probably like crying to himself. About
care.
Selling his soul and getting nothing out of it. So, so the issue now is if they're going to delay or not. I will say the initial responses from some of the White House especially have me wondering if there might be more to come, because there has not been the savage pushback.
We haven't even talked about that letter from the 64 women who were no, we didn't get raped.
So it's possible there is a weakening here. It's possible they know something we don't know yet. It's possible there's more to come. I could be reading I'm reading tea leaves here, but the White House especially has not pushed back as forcefully as I definitely expected, which could suggest.
Well, they've said we stand by our nominee and we believe him.
That's all they said. They said we stand by our previous comments. In light of a new massive article that changes the game entirely, that's weak.
Right.
That's
very and before this article came out was when that letter came out, right? Last week is when the letter came out, that letter signed by 64 women, which I thought was weird.
65, yeah.
64 women. I don't even remember. I remember three girls from high school. I remember four boys. I don't even know who remembers it, but say they preemptively came out with this letter signed by 64 women saying Kavanaugh's always been like a gentleman and never done anything to them. And which is, I mean, like
totally
at this
normal.
Point, it's like, I mean, totally normal. Like all the girls behind him, the lined up behind him in their shorts. Totally normal. All right. So we're going to keep following the story, and welcome back, Susan. Glad you had a great time. And you're back in the swamp with us.
I'm here to watch Kavanaugh and see what happens. It'll be an interesting week ahead, as always. Until then.
Yep.
Bye, guys.
See you next week. Bye-bye.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. And you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.